don't know. Hold on.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to our show. The music is still going. We're having some music problems tonight. There we go. Now it's off. Sorry about that. Oh, now it's back. Okay. I guess I'll just try to talk over the music maybe. That might be kind of fun. Are you there, Kate?
I'm here.
Can you hear me over the music?
I can.
It just must be a Blog Talk Radio situation again because we're hitting stop, 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 and it's not stopping. There we go. All right. Finally, no musical accompaniment. Well, I am Laura Mize. I think I already said that maybe.
So.
Ooh, another fabulous beginning, huh?
It only gets better. That's the good news.
I hope so. Kate, you want to introduce yourself? Did you do that while I was in my panic about
the
music?
I wasn't screaming. No, I decided to let you fight the music. Hi, if anybody who's listening, my name's Kate Hensler, and I'm a developmental interventionist with 0 to 3-year-old kids in the state of Kentucky, and I work for the First Steps program, which is our answer to federal regulation or whatever you would call that, that says every state should have an early intervention program. So ours is called First Steps. And
I think other states have that name, too. I've heard
a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah. So tonight we're going to be talking specifically to parents whose children get their therapy at home in the kind of programs that Kate and I work in those early intervention programs, because we're going to talk about tips to help you maximize your therapy sessions to get the most out of those, not only for you, but more importantly for your child. And I don't want this to not be a positive show, but we're going to be talking about just some negative things that a parent might do inadvertently even that kind of almost sabotages therapy or certainly doesn't get things kind of started on the right foot. And I've gotten feedback from other speech-language pathologists since I wrote this article last year that some of them actually copy the article and give it to parents to say, okay, I want you to take a look at this stuff, kind of to lay some ground rules before we get started with our visits here at home. And I've even found with parents that of children that I've even seen for a while, sometimes these issues sort of creep up and you don't even know how a bad habit got started or what happened, and then you find yourself kind of spinning your wheels for a few weeks to try to dig yourself out of that kind of rut. So we want to talk about some of these things, and again, this is not meant to bash parents. It's not meant to be negative in any way other than to say, let's talk about some things that you might change in a way to, again, maximize your therapy sessions at home. And this is from my website at teachmetotalk.com, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but we're in the process this summer of having the whole website redone. And so if you're visiting the site and having some difficulty navigating around, join the club, because so am I. The search feature is not working right now, but hopefully by the end of summer we'll have all those pages converted to our new, cuter, more parent-friendly format, but until then, we're just going to have to live with it. I got an email about that today, and again, no one is more frustrated with that than I am, so sorry about that. Kate, do you have anything that you want to start with tonight before we get going on this?
Nope. I'm ready to address tonight's topic.
Okay. So, again, this is from the website, teachmetotalk.com, and the name of the article is Tips for Parents for Maximizing Therapy Sessions at Home. And I wrote this one night after I was watching David Letterman, and it was like a top 10 list. So I kind of wrote it like that, top 10 things your therapist wants you to know and maybe too nice to tell you. So we'll just get started. Number one, I think the most important thing that a parent can do for a child or a toddler, I guess sometimes older children might have speech pathologists or other therapists that see them at home. I know ABA therapists often see children, even older children, for a long time at home. Don't you think, Kate?
I think they do, and I think other kids, sometimes, depending on how the state runs the program in Kentucky, and I suppose this is true nationally for early intervention. There is certainly a huge push to provide services in the natural environment, which for some kids is home, some kids is the daycare. But and I think here it's not as common now due to Medicaid cuts. They think more kids older kids used to get therapy at home, and now it's not as available. But
right,
I think it
happened. Right.
Yeah.
I think so, too. And, you know, a lot of my little clients I still see until they're 4 or 5, and at the point when I just explain to moms and dads, oh, they're too old for me, you need to have them at, you know, in a clinic, or a lot of times they'll switch and start really getting therapy at school at that point, too. So, again, if that's not your situation, this show may not have lots of information for you, but we're just going to let you know that kind of up front. So the first thing to do is really try to minimize the distractions from other people for your child, and especially during those first few sessions. I think a lot of parents, I love it when both parents are home for a therapy session right at the beginning, because I love the commitment, you know, for both parents to be there, and that's great. But when moms and dads try to have, you know, grandparents there too, and then the older brother and sisters want to stay and watch, that's a lot of competition for the therapist, don't you think?
I agree. Yeah, it could be hard, especially in the beginning when you really haven't established a rapport with the child yet. I mean, some
right.
kids love you instantly because you have the greatest toys or because you're fun, and frankly, some kids we kind of have to win over.
Right.
And convince them that we're wonderful, and then, you know, that they're going to have a great time with us. And when we're still winning them over, it's hard to have so many other things to compete with, really.
It is. And that means even, like, if you have a dog that's pretty rambunctious or a cat that's going to jump. And I had a cat one time, or a family. I was seeing a family, and the cat, every time we did bubbles, the cat got so excited and tried to pop the bubbles. And that was fun because the kid liked the cat and all that. But if it's too distracting for your child, and then your child wants to hug the puppy for 45 minutes instead of do anything else, you know, I could talk about that puppy for a good 5 or 10 minutes and be fine. But after that, I would really be struggling to come up with some way to make that therapeutic. So try to minimize those distractions. And the other big thing with that is making sure that the television is off, and have it off before your therapist even gets there. You know, don't wait until she walks in the door to try to turn the TV off, because then if it's a favorite show, your child may have a meltdown before you've even gotten started with therapy. And so then you're just kind of in the wrong place to start the session at the very beginning. So I always tell moms to do that so that they're the bad guy, not me. And the mom, sometimes it'll say, Laura's here, we have to turn your show off. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll let you watch that later. And that really sets the tone for them to be upset with me because the TV had to go off because I came in. And I think that especially is true for parents that have big TVs, you know, and then the therapy space they want me to work in is right in front of the TV, and I just think, oh, I'm good, but I don't think I can compete with Elmo today or Dora or whatever. And then I'm distracted probably sometimes more than the child is with the TV blaring in the background. So turn the TV off before your therapist gets there.
I have to say that early in my career, I guess initially didn't say anything, and then I went through a phase where I'd say, would you mind if we turn this down? Now I really kind of say, would you mind if I turn this off?
Yeah.
Mostly it's the volume thing, you know, because
yeah.
You're having to literally, I mean, I'm pretty loud during a therapy session anyway, but you're literally yelling over, and here you are trying to hold the kids' attention and keep them with you, and you know, the TV's flashing in back of you or off to the side, and you catch the kids sneaking a peek, and then, you know, so I kind of say, can we turn it off? But I agree, if they can do it before you get there, I will say once you kind of have that rapport, a lot of my kids that I see who do have the TV on, they turn it off as soon as I get there, which I always think, oh, we're doing well. They know that TV's
yeah.
going off, and they're happy to turn it off because they're really happier to play than they are to watch the TV. So, but early on, I have had some kids have some major fits and just be miserable because the mean therapy lady came in and they had to turn off their show. So
I know, and I do like it when it's art, when that's already done before I get there. Some families have the TV on just kind of in the background, and a mom may not even notice that the TV's on, and she may think that her child doesn't notice, but again, sometimes that's even more of a distraction for me because I'll hear it and I'll notice it. Mm-hmm. And I have a thing, too. I'm real auditorily distracted anyway, so even sometimes music in the background, I have to ask moms, you know, can we turn that off? And everybody's always fine with that. It's just, it's nice when it happens before I get there and doesn't make me feel all weird about asking about that. The other thing, the number three on this list is to put the pacifier and cups away. And again, we talked about this a little bit last week. I am not an anti-pacifier speech pathologist, but I think it makes it harder, again, for those kids that are pacifier dependent and who really depend on their passies and have them in their mouths a lot. It's harder if I'm pulling that out and for them not to get mad at me about that than if mom does that kind of as a warm-up and makes that sort of part of the therapy routine. You know, Kate's coming. Give me your passy. Here she comes. Here she comes. Look, she's got her toys. You could do it in that context rather than make me have to sit there and pull it out after I've been there a few minutes.
Laura, one thing we didn't really address, and I don't think it's in your top 10 list here, a sibling, if there is an older sibling, do we want to say anything about?
Yeah, we do, don't we? It's summer. We have all those older brothers and sisters
home.
We've
been dealing with a lot of siblings this summer, and that's just, you know, it is the natural environment, so they're there. Would you like to weigh in on that, or shall I?
Well, you know, first of all, in some situations, you really can use an older sibling, but that's usually if they're school age or a very, very compliant children, in that you can say to them, this is what I want you to do, and they do it. Or if you can say to them, we're going to let the child that you're there to see pick the toy, and then that's what we're playing with. And if they can follow directions, that is awesome. And if they can be a good model, so many times I'll have the older child say what I want them to say or request the next turn or the next snack. And again, they serve as a great language model for what I want my little friend to do. However, there are some older children that are so much of a distractor, again, not only for me in trying to kind of coax them into doing what we're wanting to do, or they take up so much of my time in trying to direct their behavior and their participation that I don't get to focus on the child that I'm supposed to see. And so we've tried to handle that a lot of ways. We have talked about this a lot this summer in our personal phone calls, haven't we, Kate?
Yes, because we have a couple. And I think that compliant issue is significant. You know, some kids really are very good about if you say, you know, you have to wait for me to tell you something, or I'll ask you when it's your turn. Don't just, you know, don't respond to what I say to him. And they do great.
Right.
And other kids are just so excited themselves and want to be a part of it so much. Or, you know, sometimes they may have some developmental issues themselves and they're jumping in there. And it's just so wild, you know, that it really can be hard to, you know, you're trying to focus all your attention on the one you're working with. But the fact is you're playing referee a lot of the time or trying to sit on the big one so you can get the little one
to do what you need him to do. Yeah, and they're over digging in the toys out of the bag, you know, or they're ready to put up the activity way before you've even sort of gotten started, and so they're trying to clean it up or, again, fight you for what's in your bag or the next activity, or, like you said, answering when you're really trying to get the little one to communicate with you and they jump in and kind of provide those answers. You know, and I think it does depend on the little one's personality, too, because I have one little friend right now that's in that next DVD that I have coming out who I've used her brother regularly, but they're both adopted, and so they're only about 4 or 5 months apart in age, but he, of course, because he's typically developing, has been really light years ahead of her, and she has a really low arousal level, so it's almost been easier to me to work with both of them together because he helps me keep her up and keep her interested and keep her going. Sometimes when I would see her by myself early on, you know, she was so flat and so hard to engage that he almost, he's been a great help. But lots of the time, the older brother and sister really are a big distractor. And then the little one gets mad because the older one's getting to play or the older one's making all the decisions. And again, sometimes so much of the therapist time can go toward disciplining, for lack of a better word, the older one that your little one really doesn't benefit. So step in and parent if you have an older kid that, you know, for whatever reason, temperament-wise or developmentally, you know, really can't listen and can't participate and is really kind of hogging all the time. You want to go ahead and have another activity for them to do in another room. One thing that Kate and I have talked about too lately is sometimes we'll let older children take one of our toys and go play by themselves because, you know, they're so interested in those things. But that hasn't worked out so well for us lately, and things have gotten back broken and all the parts aren't there, and that's been kind of frustrating too. So we've been a little bit more what word would I say besides mean? We've been a little more
hesitant to distribute our things around the house. Yeah, but you know what parents, I always suggest that parents keep a number of toys for the child that I'm seeing, you know, kind of things that they have their little therapy sessions with, you know, the parent and the child.
Right.
So they might use those things. Those would be special things they could use with the older sibling. So it would be something different, you know, because they're interested in the novel, just as we all are. So they could use those therapy toys with the older one. Say, you know, they're going to do that. We're going to go in the other room and play with that toy that we only do with therapy.
Yeah, and I hate the other room solution. I mean, that's kind of my last resort. And I know we have that going on with two different families that we're seeing right now because I feel like the moms then don't get to participate, don't get to see what we're doing, and don't know exactly every minute of what's gone on, what's worked, and what hasn't worked. So that's never my first choice. But with those particular families, I'm not sure there's another way to work it out because those older children are not independent enough to be left alone for an hour, and I do think that they would try to come back in so often that it would defeat the whole purpose. So, again, not best-case scenario to do that, but certainly with those particular situations, that's about the best we can do.
Right. So, anyway, but I agree sometimes. Some kids are kind of timid or shy or reserved, and if they have the sibling there, they're more comfortable. They really,
right.
You really can have a better session sometimes,
yeah.
But totally dependent on the child you're seeing and the sibling.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes what works for me is if, and I have this with several families this summer, and I've used it before, is that the mom kind of makes a deal with them and says, if you can go play in the basement or go to your room or go in here or paint at the table or Play-Doh or something, you know, their moms wouldn't normally let them do, while Laura works with the little one, then at the end you can come in and we all can have snack. And I love older siblings during snack time because their models really are great when they're asking for the particular snack and you're giving it to them, and it, you know, just kind of sets up that whole natural consequence. Oh my gosh, he said it, he got a cookie, I want to imitate that and do that. So that's how I've used older siblings too a lot, is having them stay out until the part of the session that would really benefit them being in. And I do try to do that at the end because it gives a little bit more incentive for those older children to let us do our thing and then come back, then that's their reward. You there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Right. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The next tip is to do a warm-up before your therapist comes, and that would be, again, for your child, and it works both ways. If you have a child, like I was talking about my little friend before, who has that low arousal level and she's just kind of flat and not as engaged as you would like, you really want to get her up and get her ready to play. And so for her, that her mom is great about, you know, having her kind of make the big loop around their house, or other things that moms have done before is let them jump on the bed or jump on the trampoline. And it also works for those kids who are sensory seekers and who are busy and high energy. If you do that warm-up kind of 10 or 15 minutes before your therapist arrives, then they're actually ready to settle down a little bit. So you can use that physical activity piece either to hype your kid up and get them ready to play, or wear them out a little bit and give them all the sensory input that they need before your therapist gets there. And the result is the same. You get their little bodies and their little minds really, really ready to be engaged, ready to listen, ready to participate. And that works well. I've heard you talk about that recently. Do you have a little one of your little friends that you're doing that with right now?
I do. And, you know, I've had over years, quite a few that I felt like really benefited from having some physical activity, deep pressure movement, you know, all those good OT type things that they like to talk about. But, and it seems, not to broach on your next topic, but that apraxic kids really benefit from that too. I can always tell when I see the kids that I suspect are apraxic, whether they've just gotten up, whether they've had, and you know, whether I counsel or not to, oh, you know, it would really be best if you could make sure he gets moving, if he can get some running in, some jumping, some swinging, you know, any kind of big movement stuff really seems to help him. And he just, I can always tell, you know, okay, they slept late, so they didn't get a chance.
Right.
You know, I know they try, but, you know, reality is sometimes it doesn't work out to always get it in. But, boy, it sure does make the hour more productive if that's kind of done for us, because otherwise, I mean, I kind of do it if it hasn't been done anyway, but then I spend time doing that, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's not necessarily the therapy the parents expect either,
right,
or that I'd like to be able to provide. But I feel like if I don't do it, I'm really spinning my wheels and ineffective. I mean, you can almost look, I mean, I feel like I can, and Laura, I'm sure you can, look at a kid and think, okay, you know, his eyes are twinkling, he's smiling at me, he's ready, he's going to have a good session, as opposed to you walk in, the kid's sitting there, his eyes are kind of glassy, he looks lumpy, you know.
Laying on the couch with a sippy cup, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, you know,
kind
of do an instant read and think, well, going to have to get his little mind and body ready. Otherwise, it's going to be a pretty ineffective session. So
right.
I guess that would be the way to encourage parents to do it. If you don't do it, I'll spend some of my time doing it. And I don't mind doing it, but I really do feel like, I mean, some kids don't necessarily have a full hour in them anyway in the beginning. But, you know, it just kind of sets the stage for he's ready, he's, you know, ready to go, and we're going to have a good hour. So, yeah, I feel like a lot of kids really do need that, like you said, both ends of the spectrum, whether they're kind of low arousal kids who don't attend well or kind of really, really busy sensory-seeking kids, they all benefit from, you know, from some movement and some heavy work in their muscles. So if parents will do that, we'd love that.
Yeah. And I bet your therapist would too. Get them get them ready for that session. I have a little girl right now that I always she's so attentive and so eager to play when I first get there, and she likes to sit on my lap, which I like, but she can't see my face and I can't see her face, and so she will almost snuggle into me. And her mom she was the mom we had on a few weeks ago, Teresa, Naomi's mom. She is so great about saying, I think we need the balloons. Let's get the balloons. And it is, you know, for a kid like that who seems kind of ready when you get there, and a kid who likes to snuggle and likes to be held, she just doesn't always talk as much when we don't start out with a gross motor activity. So I think as a parent, you can start to kind of recognize that in your own child and help guide your therapist. And, you know, if she's clueless like me on some days, you know, give her a big heads up and say, this is what I think we should do first, or we didn't get to play outside before you came, or we didn't get to do our normal running, jumping, spinning, swinging, whatever it is, and you might just try to incorporate that too. Anytime I see have kind of a lull in the session too, where I feel like they've, like your word, Kate, gotten kind of lumpy and are not as engaged and are just kind of, you know, laying on the floor or sitting there, I try to jump up and do something at that point too.
Right. I always think of it as, oh, I've lost them. You know, they start out good, they're talking, they're really with you, and then they just kind of go flat on you, and you see, I call it their eyes glaze over. You know, they just kind of look exhausted somehow, and sometimes I think they are kind of exhausted because some of what we do, even though it's fun, I think kind of does work their little brains pretty hard, and they're just almost mentally fatigued by it, and you have to kind of regroup and say, oh, you know, let's do the balloons, let's do the rockets, let's do the race cars, something to get them moving again so that they come back to you.
Right, and we'll see kids, and we used to have a little guy several years ago that would yawn all the time. Do you remember him talking about? He would yawn a lot. And parents really will say, oh, no, he's so tired. And we have to explain that that's just his little system kind of. Sometimes it is tired or they're sleepy or it's nap time or whatever, but sometimes it's just their little system kind of. You can see, I think about the power bars going down. You got to get that arousal level back up. And so if you notice that during therapy, you might have to kind of, again, like Teresa does, take the reins a little bit and say, let's get him moving a little bit and see if we can't get him back with us and engaged a little more. And usually when kids are doing that, some therapists, occupational therapists will say, let them do that for a minute or two to kind of regroup and then introduce an activity that kind of gets them hyped up again. Sometimes I forget that part. The first little yawn or the first little lull, I might want to, woohoo, you know, whip it back up again. But your OT might tell you to actually let them have that little time and then a couple minutes later introduce that really fun, get them going activity again.
Yeah, I do see, I mean, I have kids certainly on my caseload who do that. They go flat, they yawn, they get, you know, they kind of lose focus and ability, really, you know, that hand in hand with
quiet.
That, they're not really talking as much as they were. They're not really signing as much as they were, whatever it is. They're kind of just going down. And I don't think parents always recognize that, particularly early on, but even as they've been in therapy for a while, it really is hard for kids, you know, even though it's fun. And that's certainly both of our approaches to therapy, and we want them to be happy, and because we know that that's going to be their best shot at giving us what we want, is if it's they're happy and laughing and smiling and, you know, engaged. But it really is, I always try and remind parents, it's really hard for them, you know, and I don't think, I don't know that that's obvious to most parents because it doesn't look like it should be hard. They're just playing, you know. But what we're asking them to do, you know, give me the word, give me the sign, respond, focus, is difficult for a lot of kids with language delays when they're young. So it's hard.
It is. Yeah. And I always tell parents, remember when you took the ACT or a big exam at school, you know, how exhausted you felt when you walked out of that room? That's how he or she feels when therapy's over. So then I'm usually saying, she can have that passy back now or go get his sippy cup because he needs a little bit of a break because they have worked really, really hard and all their little neurons are firing and their brains again. And, you know, that's just, it may not have been so physically taxing, but mentally they've done a lot of work during that hour. So they need that little break time. Even if they didn't get it intermittently through the session, they certainly need it at the end.
Right.
Okay. Do you want to say anything more about that or do you want to move on?
Oh, I think we're good. Just, you know, encourage any parent getting their child ready for therapy to really get them ready as much as they can by getting them moving and I'd say turn off the TV a little while before we get there because those kids who really, really kind of zone out to the TV, and that's not certainly hand-in-hand with language-related kids, but I see a lot of kids who tend to do that. You know, they really get engaged or engrossed in watching television. They get really kind of flat when they do that. I mean,
right,
I do. You know, I'm not saying that's unique to young kids, but I think most of us do. It's a zone out time, and they're zoned
right.
out. And if you immediately walk in and say, okay, you know, now you're going to focus, a little bit of in between or a little bit of move the body, get the mind ready
yeah.
would be very helpful. But
that's
beyond
good
that,
advice.
No. Yeah.
Okay, the next one is follow your therapist's lead with participating in the sessions. And I've already said I love it when moms and dads can be present for the session and can be there and participate or at least watch what we're doing. Sometimes, though, moms are so chatty, either with me, just about things that have gone on, and that used to happen to me a lot earlier in my career where I would really talk about family things, and I don't do that as much anymore because I've matured and feel like, okay, I'm here for this hour to focus on your child's communication ability, and not that I don't love you and love your family, but I don't necessarily have to hear about the whole weekend and what happened, that kind of thing. And so unless a mom is really chatty, or I have a mom right now, and I think I've talked about this before, who's so distracting to her child with she's always interjecting disciplinary things with, tell her please, call her Miss Laura. You don't say, I want. You say, may I please have. You know, and when a mom is doing that kind of thing, you know, I really try to talk to them and say, you know, we're not really accomplishing that much right now. I want you to back off that a little bit and let me just kind of work with her so that you can see what works and what doesn't work. So I think you can kind of follow your therapist's lead on that. We were talking before about the two moms that we have right now who have older, demanding children who absolutely, and because those kids are still preschool age, they can't necessarily leave them the whole time. So, again, that's not our best case scenario. But, you know, you're just going to have to figure out what works for your family, what works for your therapist, and what works for your child that she's there to see as to how involved you need to be. You know, I do think, and one other thing that I already talked about is you could chime in and tell her why something might be going badly, like if he's been up all night or if, you know, he's on his second day of an antibiotic, he's got an ear infection. Those are kinds of things that you want to interject and tell her, but constantly kind of jumping in with things that aren't totally related to the activity that you're doing probably is distracting to the therapist and your child. So you're just going to want to kind of play it by ear there. Do you want to talk about this a little bit, Kate?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm reading it, and I think that's reasonable to let them know, but...
Yeah, if your child is really clingy to you, you may want to be there, but not be quite so... available. I have some moms that might check email while we're sitting there, you know, from a laptop, and they're still kind of right there. And that's what's worked so great for the other mom who the discipline thing has kind of gotten in the way. It's better if she's a little bit distracted, still there, still seeing what's going on, but not necessarily totally immersed in what we're doing. Some moms, it goes beautifully when they're, most moms, I think, or for my caseload anyway, they do a great job being there and fully participating, but some moms might need to still be there but do something that's not quite as, what word am I looking for? Where you're just not quite as available to your child so that he's not trying to constantly hug on you and kiss you and get you to really kind of close me out there.
Right.
So you will, you know, and I have had kids like that. I don't really have anybody like that right now, but I've had kids that they were so engrossed in their mom that I couldn't really get that relationship going, and they didn't ever really want to play with me. And so for those moms, I've gotten a lot better with saying, this is what I want you to do, and kind of coaching them through that. And then I try to kind of, in as gentle and kind of way as possible as I can say, is, gosh, you know, you got to let me in here or I'm not going to be able to help you. You know, I'm not going to help you figure out what's going on and different ways that we can interact and different activities that we can do if he's so hyper-focused on you when I'm here.
And I think some of that is if a child's not completely comfortable or may just be kind of innately shy, if mom's there, it, or, you know, so available, as you say, you know, sitting right there and he can snuggle up in her lap and everything. It almost encourages that shyness or the, you know, timid, or because mommy's right there. And if she weren't so available but kind of off, he might be a little bit more interested in what you were trying to get him to do, or, you know, the toy or whatever. So I don't know, Laura, do you really, when you say fully participates in therapy, when you have a mom sit in on your session, do you really have her do a lot of what you're doing?
I do. And you know what? I think that might just be the difference in our caseloads, because I have a lot of moms. A lot of the moms that have been on in the past few weeks where we've had the parent success stories, almost all of those moms have been really, really participatory and really sitting right there with us and interjecting and doing the same kinds of things that I'm doing. And again, that might just be luck of the draw, or again, just kind of differences in some of the, you know, I don't know how to say it, but so I really have had more moms, I would say, in the last 5 or 6 years fully participate right there with me, sitting right there, more than not. And I have moms that are there, but that kind of sit back and watch. I have those, but I hardly ever have moms who are totally checked out but don't do anything.
Right. I have a number of moms who are there, but they sit back. And I mean, it's probably also a reflection of you do a better job of engaging the moms. I frequently think I should have her involved better than I do. I don't know. I'm just talking out loud here, but I do have a number who sit and watch, and they don't distract the child. I mean, they're right there, but the child's, you know, far enough along or comfortable enough that he or she really doesn't care whether or not the mom's there.
Right.
But I don't really do a great job of getting them to really be a part of it by doing, you know, some. I mean, I do some, but not, I don't feel like you do, and I need some pointers on that. We'll have to make that a different chat, but anyway.
You know, and I think one thing is I've gotten so much better about this in the last few years, too, is really kind of jumping in and coaching moms, too.
Right.
And that's uncomfortable for therapists to do right at the beginning, is to try to kind of, and it's uncomfortable for some parents. I mean, and I can tell when I'm doing it at the very beginning with some parents, I can kind of see their faces like, oh, no. And I try to really say, I just want you to be able to do it when I'm not here. I'm just telling you this because I want you to know what you're doing is making it not work. And when I can tell you to tweak it a little or change it a little, I think it's because he's going to do better, and then you're going to be able to do it all week long without me. And that really sets the stage for that. And, you know, our program with early intervention programs and with the whole focus on natural environments, you really do want them to be able to do it when you're not there. And for some parents, they can get it just by watching you do it because they're seeing you. But some parents, they have to almost kind of jump in and do it and do badly. And for you to be able to say, well, if you just made that a little bit more fun, or you're asking him all yes and no questions, you know, and point out those things that we know because we've made those mistakes, then I think it kind of helps them get a little bit further along. I have some parents, like, remember Jennifer that was on a few weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
She pretty much darn near do the therapy while I was there. You know, you can tell that by talking to her. She would just really, I mean, fully participate. Or I would be able to say, Jennifer, she can't do it because you're doing blah, 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 blah. But, again, sometimes that is, I think that I've set the stage for that at the beginning. Sometimes I think it's just that kind of mom.
Right.
That they just kind of would have done that anyway.
Right.
So.
Well, I just wondered about that. So.
Yeah, I have a lot that do. I'm trying to kind of think my caseload right now. We'll have to talk about that another time, but I have a lot that are fully participatory, and I have had quite a few in the last couple of years that are like Jennifer, that pretty much sometimes are, I think, oh, she's really the lead today, and I'm kind of here to kind of tell her what to do, you know,
right.
Kind of just make suggestions, and that's fun. One of my little guys named Jack His mom is fabulous, and she's kind of doing that when I'm there on days that she can. She had a sick baby this week and couldn't really do it. But it's always fun for me because sometimes I really learn from the moms. I'll think, boy, that was good. I'm using that.
I'll use that one, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like working with another therapist sometimes because they do know their kids better than I do.
Right.
And they do have developed, you know, little things that work or, you know, ways to redirect that I think, oh, boy, that was good. I'm going to remember that next time I'm here. So, anyway, we digress as usual.
Yeah.
Okay. But the big point about that is talk to your therapist about how much she wants you to be involved. Some people, personality-wise, probably it might throw them or they just might be so off balance for you to be there and kind of fully participate. So you're just going to want to see what happens. And again, I don't necessarily, if that were a kid, if I was working with a kid and he was really, really hard to get and he was, again, hyper-focused on mommy and never let me be a part of that, or I didn't feel effective in being able to say to his mom, I want you to do this, I want you to try this, or I want you to do this, I wouldn't hesitate to say to that mom, okay, back off a little bit. Let me see what I can get by myself here. And then we'll figure out how we can make that work during the week. So anyway, all right, let's move on. Number six, cancel if you know you're not going to get anything accomplished. And please, and this would be especially for mothers of children that I see, cancel if anybody at home is contagious with any sort of illness. I get that whole of being afraid of that I'm going to get sick, probably from my mother, who's probably listening. But if your husband is home with the flu, please, you really could make your therapist sick and then make her take it home to her kids and all the rest of the kids she's going to see that day or the next couple of days. So I'm pretty picky about that, and that's one of my things that I do say up front every single new client that I have. If your child is sick or you are sick or somebody else is home and they're really, really sick with something contagious, don't let me come. We'll save that visit for another day. I don't think you're as weird about that as I am.
I don't like it when the child I'm seeing is sick. I have had that happen more than once. You know, you go to touch them or you're wiping their face because they're messy and you realize, oh, he's burning up. And, you know, is he sick? You know. I know I don't really
and a big
worry
hedge.
Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't worry too much about family members unless it's something pretty bad. If it's, you know, I tend to be susceptible to respiratory stuff but not digestive stuff. So I worry
and
more about
the opposite.
Yeah, I worry more about the respiratory stuff, but you know, sometimes we don't know that until we get there. But yeah, if they know that the family has a bug or that the child just really didn't sleep the night before and is miserable, it really is best that they just let you know ahead of time, and you can do it later in the week or the following week or however it works out. But really a waste for everybody and doesn't do anything to help anybody. So
right. And the other thing is if you know that it's so hectic a day, like you're leaving on vacation that afternoon at 3 o'clock, you're probably not going to want to have speech that day at noon. You know, everybody is just not able to focus, or if like you have a repair person that's coming in and out and in and out, sometimes the little boys that we see are so excited about the man with tools that there's no way you can keep their attention for an hour. So you'll just have to kind of use your judgment on that. Usually your therapist is not going to like a ton of cancellations either, so you'll want to balance that. But especially if your child is sick, you're not going to want to have your person come that day. All right, the next tip, handle your child's major behavioral issues but not the minor ones. And I've already talked about that a little bit too. When a mom is constantly interjecting with cueing them to say please or thank you, or, you know, they'll try to say Laura and then I'll hear, you know, the mom will chime in, Miss Laura, it's Miss Laura. And I think, oh, my gosh, he can barely say my name. Let's just be happy with what he's done. Or other little behavioral things. You know, so many of those things I just ignore anyway, don't you? Or redirect when they're doing something that's not that big of a deal. You just try to kind of redirect that behavior and get them back on track with what you're doing. And sometimes moms can because they're trying to, you know, they're good moms and they don't want their children to appear to be misbehaving in any way, will almost sabotage what's going on because they're constantly getting on to them about something. Have you had that happen?
Yeah, and we really want therapy to be a positive thing because we know that's going to lead to the best outcomes for the child. And even if it's not something that you're doing directly, if a child's constantly being reprimanded during your session, it would be natural for the child to assume, well, every time that Laura or Kate person comes here, I'm being yelled at and I'm in trouble. So, you know, we really don't want them to have that association.
Right.
With us. So that's why you say, unless it's a big thing. I mean, if he takes a huge toy and hits Laura over the head or, you know, something like that, okay, by all means, you know, step in and parent your child. But if it's a little infraction, again, we are asking these kids, even though it's certainly designed to be fun, it is challenging to them. And so sometimes we do see some minor behavioral things that really in the big picture don't amount to much. And if those are, you know, I mean, I kind of feel guilty sometimes thinking, I'm asking him to do all this stuff that I know is hard for him. And
right.
I hate it, but it's hard, you know, and we are kind of taxing their little systems, if you will, you know. And then when they act out or they've hit the wall, they're exhausted, instead of doing what we've asked them to do, they toss the block across the room.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably not, shouldn't warrant 10 minutes of being yelled at or disciplined or time it out or, you know.
Right.
I mean,
you just get them to go get the block. And
yeah.
You can either help them jump over there and get it, or usually it's just, oh, my goodness, go pick that up. That doesn't go there. You know, that kind of thing. Or let's throw all the blocks in the bag while we clean up. You know, we can usually just redirect it in a way that still keeps it pretty positive, but yet addresses the behavior so that that doesn't continue. And I do agree, if it's major, if a kid has, you know, smacked his mom in the face, bit his brother, you know, those are things that really do need to be addressed, but just little silly things, let it go.
How I feel about it. If it's just slightly, you know, they're acting out but not hurting themselves or anybody else, they haven't damaged anything beyond repair, oh, well, let's minimize it. We'll address it, you know, in the session and move along. It doesn't have to become a big issue. Because
right.
I do think sometimes we, I don't want to say encourage, but because we're asking them to do things that are hard, sometimes you see that frustration. You know,
right.
Most of the kids we see can't say, no, I don't feel like it. You can't make me do it. So
right.
They might do something that they wouldn't ordinarily do or is kind of unexpected by either us or the parent. You know, some manifestation of that frustration that we're intentionally causing, really, in the, you know, with the best of intentions. But, you know, I mean, we do ask them to do things that they have to really struggle to do.
Yeah,
so,
and it makes them more apt to have those little behavioral outbursts, and that's okay. We're used to that. Most therapists are.
Right.
If you have a therapist that's really big on discipline, you may just want to talk about that and say, you know, I don't think we should address every little thing that's going on here, because I think, you know, you're going to spend your whole hour here doing that versus the real work that we need to be doing. But I have had moms before, you know, when a kid purposefully does something that's so out of line, or that's not even the word I want to say, something that's so huge that you do want to address it, that don't address it, and then I feel, at that point step in and say, well, we're putting that toy away, or you need to sit right here and be quiet by yourself and do a little modified timeout. I remember you telling me a story one time about you would put a kid up on the couch that was a hitter or something. I can't remember what the kid did, but you talked about that.
He clocked me in the nose with a ViewMaster.
Yeah.
I was bleeding and seeing stars. Yeah, that was probably the worst infraction yet. But, the other things. One of the ones that does come up kind of routinely for me is sometimes I'll have parents who really, really feel strongly that a child needs to finish each and every activity that I've introduced.
Yeah.
And that is not really something that I necessarily agree with, especially early on when, you know, things, it is harder and they're not used to therapy. And I'm pretty, I think, laid back, and I think you are too, Laura, from what, you know, what we've said over the years.
Right.
About following the child's lead, and I say to parents routinely, you know, it's okay that he really only wanted to put four pieces in the 10-piece puzzle. As he does it and it gets a little bit easier for him, and he's played with all these other things, you know, might be in 2 weeks or a month or 2 months, but eventually we'll get to a point where he's able to and wants to stay with things, you know, till the end of the activity. And sometimes I have parents who really, you know, get involved at that point. And for my purposes, I don't really feel like it's critically important that kids finish each and everything we do.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think a lot of therapists do, because I've heard other moms say that. His OT makes them finish everything. If they start it, they have to finish it.
I think a lot of therapists, and that is the one I hear the most commonly, is that OTs seem to feel very strongly about that. And I just think, personally, that, you know, like I've already said, if a therapy session is fun, we get the best outcome, we get the best results for that given day and over time for the whole duration of our time with the child. So don't get into, I don't believe it's beneficial or conducive to a good session or a good relationship with a child to get into a power struggle with a 2-year-old about, nope, you got to do the last piece. You got to, you know, I mean, really, because we can make really all the activities that we have therapeutic, if you will, so why would we bother having a fight about the last piece of the puzzle or, you know, and sometimes two kids do kind of shut you down quickly, and I do wish, and I usually try and, you know, one more, and I think, okay, that's, we've pushed him just a little beyond his comfort or his interest, but we'll move on. You know, I think it's important for kids to be able to know that they have some say in what they're going to do. We are going to push them, but we're going to meet them halfway and do things that they think are fun. So,
right.
Yeah, and that is, you know, what parents seem to sometimes really get focused on. Has to get it done. So.
Yeah, we have a caller, Kate.
Oh, yay.
Oops. Hi, caller, are you there?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Excuse me. I was calling because I was curious. I'm having a hard time getting this answer from the people my son is seeing. But what is your estimate in terms of how long it should take before you really start feeling, you know, some results from speech and OT?
Really, it depends on what's wrong or what the problem is at the beginning. And gosh, I wish I had a crystal ball and could predict from just an initial visit how long things were going to take. And this is probably a question that I'm asked more frequently than any other question with kids that I'm personally seeing on my own caseload. But you should start to see little changes, especially happen within the session. Your therapist should be able to tell you, you know, even if it's a subtle change, you should start to see those after a few weeks. What do you think about that, Kate? I mean, I just think, oh, gosh, I'm struggling to really come up with a good answer without sounding
judgmental. I'll jump in a little bit. I would say it's really hard not having a clue about your child, his
right.
I think you said your son, individual situation. I mean, you know, it's like, saying, how long will it take to build that house? Well, could be a little stick house and it'd take you a day, or it could be a mansion and take you 2 years. So we don't really know, but I would agree with Laura that, with the exception of if he has a lot of sensory issues going on, if he has, because sometimes those kids can take us longer just to get any kind of, or significant social concerns. You know, it's going to take us longer to effectively bond and get in there and get some kind of a positive relationship with that child going. And so even though assuming we're using the right techniques, we may not have the right rapport with the child to really see any obvious, you know, progress immediately. Because I've certainly seen some kids where, whether they were autistic or they had some very significant sensory or social things going on, you know, sometimes the positive thing to come from a session is he let me, you know, play with him with the puzzle. He looked at me and smiled three times. And that
while he was jumping off the bed. Yeah,
right.
Something that subtly you may not be able to see, but that your therapist should be pointing out, this was different this week. This is what he did this week that he didn't do before.
Yeah.
You know, and so you can, if you want to tell us a little bit about your situation, we could maybe give you some more direction, or I don't know if that's, you know, if that's the
sometimes,
answer you were looking for.
Yeah, sometimes those things, it's, I could see from a parental standpoint that you, and I'm not speaking for you, but a parent might think, well, he does that. Well, see, here's the thing. He may do it with you, but he doesn't. He may not let other people get to him that way. He may not have that bond with even his father or his grandmother or his babysitter or a stranger. And, you know, we are initially strangers, so sometimes we spend some time just getting the kid to connect with us, and those are the kids where the progress probably is going to take a little longer because we have to get that going before really we can say, wow, he said 20 words, you know, or he, whatever it is, because if that's not there, we're probably not going to have much success. So did you want to say anything about your specific, your child, or did you just want to see if we could do our best at answering it?
No, I know it's a generic question. I don't know. It's hard because I feel like the things you're saying where I don't really feel like at the end of a session I actually really do get a rundown as to what people think is the progress. And I mean, maybe little comments during a session, a tiny little comment here or there, but I really don't feel like I receive that on any regular basis. And so I think that contributes to me kind of going home and saying, you know, okay, well, was that worthwhile?
So do you have your you're taking your child to a clinic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. And I think in that situation it's hard because, you know, your therapist has the next kid coming, and so there's not always a ton of time to sit down and talk about stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, what you might want to do is shoot her an email or just use a session where you talk about progress and where, you really get that feedback. Or part of a session, you could say, you know, the last 15 minutes today, I want that to be me coming in and talking with you about what's going on and the changes that you're seeing or any roadblocks that you think we're having or that. And I think that consultative time is a very necessary part of therapy. And it really, a lot of moms, unfortunately, and even some therapists look at it like, that it's not a part of that hour that they're there, or the 30 minutes or whatever, but really mm-hmm. sometimes that's the most important part, where you're getting that feedback and where you're figuring out, you know, how things are going. I would never want to have a kid in an outpatient situation where you didn't get some feedback from the therapist at least, you know, every few sessions to let you know how that's going. And again, that's not necessarily outside of his therapy time. If he's there for a 30-minute session, you might say, work with him for 20 minutes, and then I'm coming in for the last 10 minutes, and we're going to talk about what's going on. And, you know, that's part of the session, not 10 minutes after so that she runs late for her next kid.
Yeah, because the things that make me wonder about all this is actually, it's kind of funny because I just got in a few minutes ago, but heard you guys talking about how to, you know, make the session work better and so on and so
right.
forth, and how to take things throughout the rest of the week. And I don't feel like I leave there with a plan as to what I can do.
Yeah, and that is too bad because that should be a big part of your therapy session. So, again, if I were you, and I just talked to a mom a few weeks ago that I used to see her little girl, and she was calling me saying, I don't feel like I know what's going on anymore. And
mm-hmm.
that was my suggestion to her, is that she have a part of that therapy session every week where she comes in and where they talk about what's happened. And again, that your therapist is not going to want to do that if you say, okay, see my kid for an hour and then for the next 15 minutes after that.
Yeah.
But to include it as part of that session, you know, I think that's very useful information. And you're with them the rest of the week. You're going to want to know what you can do at home and what's working. And if she feels like you're at a standstill too, you need to talk about new strategies, you know, that even she can do, or find somebody else, you know, that
mm-hmm.
can work with you and teach you what you need to be doing at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it would be good to give them a heads up, like you might call them and leave them a voicemail or email them or however you have access to them and say, you know, I've been wondering about what I should be doing at home and I'd like some feedback on that. I've been wondering about how he's really doing and what kind of progress you're seeing. And call them as early as you can before the next session so they have time.
That's a good idea.
You know, because sometimes on the spot you're thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, if I'd known this, I would have been thinking about this. Because I know when we see kids, when we have meetings, that is the time as we get ready for those. We do kind of sit and look at, even if it's to ourselves, you know, well, what is he doing now? What's better? What do we need to focus on? Where are we still having issues? And so if she has that heads up, I think she'll probably do a little better job about, you know, what you can do at home and what she's seeing in the sessions. And are they 30-minute sessions?
No, an hour.
Oh, that's pretty good for in-center. A lot of times they're 30 minutes.
Yeah, I would definitely do that. I think, and Kate's advice was good, so that some therapists might not do as good a job with you just saying that on the spot as if you gave her a week or two's notice that you wanted to meet with her for part of the session.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question, though. Thank you so much for calling.
Sure, thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
We have somebody else holding on.
You're kidding.
Caller, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey,
hello.
What can we do for you?
Hey, I just wanted to Annette.
Hey,
hi.
Annette.
Hey. I had a meltdown situation to deal with. I'm like distracted now. I wanted to comment on what Kate said earlier about getting parents involved and my viewpoint of it. I was one of the moms that seemed to run the session myself because I could tell that the therapist wasn't engaging my son.
Right.
And he just wasn't interacting like I knew he could. So I would have to step it up and make it fun and, you know, get the activities going. And it seemed like I ran her off. So it was... You know, I just got that feeling because
well,
I never
got homework.
Well, I hope
you got paid for it, Annette. That's all.
No,
I got
did.
The paycheck.
What's so strange though is because I felt like they kind of blew me off. You know, they gave me the reason my insurance quit paying, yada yada, and see ya. So I just wondered if you know maybe you know I was stepping on toes when I did that, but I was learning a lot. Mainly from Laura's videos.
I was going to say, you should have given them Laura's DVD, and then they could have been better.
I did, and I think maybe that was another insult. It's like, do it like this. This works. Do it like this. So, I just, you know, wanted to say that Kate was, you know, said that she has a lot of moms that kind of sit on the sidelines and don't really get involved, and maybe they're just nervous and don't know that they can. And
maybe
you know, kind of give them an option of, you know, hey, you want to come sit with us and, you know,
let's see what we can do together.
I
was saying, and I think this, I mean, I know I try and evaluate my talents as I go along, and I know that Laura is really good about talking to parents and about, you know, that's why the DVDs are so effective, because she really is good at sharing the information and how to put it so that people get it, and don't, she's not offensive. And I struggled personally, professionally, with how am I going to say this so that it doesn't sound like I'm criticizing them. And I'm just not Southern enough is really my problem.
I was just going to say, you're from the North. That's the problem.
You know,
that's
a friendly voice, a Southern voice, isn't it?
The Northerner in me just comes right out. And I don't mean to be so direct, but, you know, we are what we are. But, no, seriously, I struggle with it, and I think I'd like to be able to say, let's try it this way, or, you know, I have to put it in the Laura speak, and then it sounds nicer. But so, you know, I don't think I foster that direct involvement as well as Laura does. And so I'm still working on that. But I think it is great, because I do think that that's one of the great things about the DVD, is that you can watch it in your living room and you're comfortable and you can implement things. I think, Annette, you were one who kind of watched some of it and did that and then watched, you know, did it in increments. And
right.
But it's so good to be able to watch it but then turn around and do it. So
Well, it's not hard once you find that enjoyment in it, and you think of it as, you know, just playing and having a good time, and having the suggestions kind of gives you a direction to go.
Right.
And but so that's what has helped me, because sometimes I don't think of all the key phrases that I need to be, you know, focusing on, because day-to-day functionality language is one thing, but conversational and, you know, just trying to expand the thoughts on things, you know, well, what do we do when we're cold, you know, I mean, things like that.
Right.
You don't really think of that unless it's pointed out.
Right.
So, I mean, I have learned a lot of that kind of thing from watching the videos.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. But, Kate, I'm going to tell you something really, really quick. When we are in school, we are trained how to treat the kids, not how to teach parents how to treat the kids. And
uh-huh.
So that's really a totally different thing, and I think lots of therapists struggle with that.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Even some good therapists.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because I mean,
it's different. It's an adult education degree is
right.
What we really should have a lot of training with, is how to teach an adult how to do this. And so
right.
I don't want you to feel weird about that, or, you know, I don't want this to turn into that, because you're great at what you do.
But I'm better at doing it than I am at teaching it, and that's one thing that I've benefited with doing the podcast, is that we talk about a lot of these things, and I get to benefit from your experience, but... Yeah, I'm sure, Annette, that's pretty – I don't mean to say it's funny, because I'm sure that was not pleasant that you ran your therapist off, or that they skedaddled when you – but, you know, that – it's interesting, because to us this approach is obvious and it's very effective, but it is kind of unique. I mean, of all the therapists I know, I don't really know maybe one other who's moved away who has a very similar approach, where it's very play-based, very fun, very animated, hold their attention. That's kind of unique, so it doesn't surprise me that you ran into a speech therapist who was intimidated by it, because she probably
was gonna say,
knew.
Yeah. I mean, she knew you were better at it than she was.
Right.
It was the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, you know, it was intimidating for me, too, because I didn't get – you know, the homework, so to speak, that a lot of parents expect. And when you're faced with, you know, oh, my gosh, my kid needs speech therapy, and just the shock of it all, and then having to deal with somebody, and you're expecting to see something miraculous happen, and it's not.
Yeah.
And then you have to wonder, well, what more can we do? And the
right.
communication between the therapist and the parent really should be so much more than what it is. And like the previous mom that was talking about, not knowing if there's, you know, progress or not because she's not getting feedback, yes, that mom needs some encouragement, because it is very depressing when you go day after day, week after week, and you're like, are we doing anything? Is this really benefiting us? And
I think when a mom asks that, if you don't have a therapist that's clued into that, it does make a therapist kind of think, oh, gosh, what are we doing? Maybe we should change our approach here. Maybe I should try something different.
Right. And see, I was always up front and said, hey, you know, I want to work on this, because this is
right.
where we're having a problem. And so then we would change the goals, and we would, you know, work on something a little bit different, because we obviously weren't getting anywhere that way. Let's try it this way. So, yeah, I was not bossy, but because I am not a bossy person. But I just felt like I need to maximize this here and now
right.
to get the most benefit out of it, because otherwise she was just drilling him, you know,
right.
just choices. That was pretty much all it was. Here, do you want this one or this one? And repeat after me. So it wasn't really engaging. And
right.
her toys were even kind of boring. And I'm like, hey, let's get this, you know. And I have the little
yeah.
magnet books with the clothes and the food and the other stuff in there that we could actually put our hands on and, you know, talk about the different things going on. So she could have come over empty-handed, because I got plenty of things to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my expectations were high of her coming in thinking that she's going to just grab a hold of him and make him talk. And
yeah.
it just wasn't happening. So I felt like I had to step up to the plate and you know, get the interaction going. So I hope I didn't run her off, but...
Oh, well.
Oh, so we're doing much better now. And I don't have to clean my house every Tuesday and Thursday.
Oh, well, thanks for calling, Annette, and sharing that. But, you know, moms
right.
really do need to hear that. Sometimes when it's not going real well, or you're feeling like, I don't really know what's going on here. I think we ought to be getting somewhere. And I've had moms say that kind of thing to me, and I say,
yeah.
Are you kidding me?
This, right,
these
I'm
are
surprised.
All the changes that have happened. You know, these are the, let's talk about progress here. I have a mom right now that I was, my husband and I were walking today, and I was talking about this with him. She just saw her reassessment, and she still doesn't really feel like her little girl is talking, and she is talking a lot. And,
right.
You know, I was able to say, what are you talking about? Are we talking about the same little girl here? Look at what all she said today. You sit here and, you know, help me go through this list. She said all of these different things. This is talking. And so sometimes it's just a matter of you and the therapist getting on the same page. And I
and
do
you
think
can look
those
at the other side of that coin, too, as, oh, gosh. My head just went blank. where you were talking about the reevaluation and the mom not seeing any changes. Well, maybe those things are happening at home, and that's very common for mom. You know, oh, well, I see that all the time. How is that different? You
right.
know what I mean?
And
so that's
yeah.
where she needs
yeah.
to get in with the SLP and say, hey, you know,
right.
this is something
it,
we are doing right. So let's
well, and it does. It really does help to get on the same page, even if the mom is uncomfortable about that, and. Even if the therapist is uncomfortable, too, sometimes you need to have those conversations, though, and just kind of lay it all out there where, you know, you can really talk about what's going on and what your new game plan together needs to be.
And I did
all
make
right.
that big mistake one day, and I said, you know, I feel like I'm doing more without you here. And I felt so bad that I had to apologize the next time she came over. But we actually made some progress with that. So, but it did. It frustrated me to that point where I had to say something,
yeah.
you know. So, yeah, there needs to be open communication all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, we're 10 minutes over, ladies. We got to go.
I see. Okay,
thanks
for calling.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.